John Blickman joins me this week to discuss the business aspects of starting a small brewery. This is Beersmith Podcast number 199.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 199, and it's mid-September 2019. John Blickman joins me to talk about the business side of starting a small brewery. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They're currently offering 20% off their all-access subscription pass with access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com/beersmith to get your all-access pass today. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com/beersmith. And also the Brew Commander. The Brew Commander is a new brew house controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is an innovative, high-quality brew house controller with ultra-high precision and the ultimate in flexibility. Whether integrated or freestanding, the Brew Commander offers automated step mashing, boil timers, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. Order yours today from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, visit BlickmanEngineering.com for more information. And finally, Beersmith 3 is available now for download, and also the mobile version's out. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider recipe support to the Beersmith platform, along with new integrated water profile and mash pH tools for beer brewing. Dozens of new features, including cloud folders, updated databases, support for fruit juice and honey, as well as new Whirlpool hop options. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com and give it a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome John Blickman. John is the president of Blickman Engineering and a longtime home brewer. John, it's great to have you back on the show, my friend.
Great to be here. How you been, Brad?
I am well. How about you? What's going on at Blickman Engineering these days?
Oh, just always dreaming up more ideas than we have time to develop. And so working on some good commercial stuff, some fun homebrew stuff coming out, some new features and some new products. So
I know you had some new stuff at HomebrewCon. What can you mention just a couple of them here before we get started?
Yeah, the big one was our Brew Commander temperature controller. It's both gas, propane, and electric. And it's got a really cool touchscreen interface, really homebrew or brewing focused control. So it has just lots of neat features that you just don't get with a PID based system. So go to our webpage, check it out. It's pretty awesome. And the price point is great. We're able to source a lot of it here in the States and get the price down quite a bit from our previous product, and it has a lot more features.
And it's a microcontroller based than one, I think, right? With a touchscreen.
Yes, it is. Yep, microcontroller based. We use a really high precision thermistor thermometer for it, and it's got a real easy to connect to your kettle and adaptable. You can add bolt the modules together and add on them to them in the future. It's got a neat little touchscreen button to turn your pump on and off, and it'll do recipe automation. For mash and for boil and all sorts of really cool stuff.
Nice. Looking forward to seeing that. Now, in addition to the homebrew, though, you do a lot of professional brewing equipment, I understand.
That is true. We've actually been selling our one barrel system since 2007 or 8 when we came out with our Boilermaker. We've got hundreds, if not a thousand, of those things out there, individual kettles, operating in breweries people have just started these breweries and small areas, tap rooms, or just even to just kind of get, established. Do they like commercial brewing as their market for it? And then it becomes a great pilot system for it. And then the past few years, we've really ramped up and sell systems up to about 7 barrel. And we really tailored some of these systems specifically towards that market. We didn't just scale down a big skidded commercial system. We've kind of made a cross between those, between homebrew and the skidded commercial systems, and we call it our hybrid system, and they're very economical and just super easy to use, super easy to install.
So you have 1, 3, 5, 7 roughly barrel systems?
We added a 2 barrel, so we have a 1, a 2, a 3.5, a 5, and a 7 are our workhorse systems. And then, of course, we've got fermenters and bright tanks and pumps and chillers and glycol chillers and all that kind of stuff to go with it. Hose, everything from fittings and hoses to complete brew houses. So, you know, we've been around for a long time, and we're just happy to share our experience with people. And that's some of what we're going to do today.
I think, you also did a webinar recently on going pro and talked quite a bit about the business aspect of going pro, which is what we're going to talk about today. How many breweries do you think you've helped get started here?
Oh, geez. I would put a guess at somewhere between 300 and 500. I mean, just a lot of breweries, and a lot that became pilot systems in bigger breweries. So quite a few.
Nice. Well, let's talk through some of the big decisions you have to make if you're starting a brewery. And perhaps the first one and one of the most fundamental ones is, you're going to start with just a tap room, or are you going to go into a production brewery where the margins are a little bit lower, right?
The margins can be a lot lower, the gross margins, because you're selling, you get like roughly 100 pints out of a keg.
U.S. keg of beer, which is what, 31 gallons, I think, something
like that. Like a half barrel. So what's that, 15 and three quarters? 15 and a half,
yeah, gallons, which is I don't know how many liters. I'll figure it out in a minute.
Right, so wholesale, you're going to sell that keg of beer for 150 to 180, depending on what it is and that kind of thing. And of course, that's going to depend where you're at in the country and whatnot. But if you're selling them for $5 or $6 a pint, then you're getting, $500 or $600 of revenue out of that same keg of beer. Now, that said, there are some other expenses that go with it that, having a retail presence and all that, that you wouldn't have if you were just a production brewery. So with production brewery, you've got to have, to make the same amount of money, you would just need to make more beer. But then you've got distribution and distribution costs and things like that. So, there's trade-offs both ways. But the key thing is to understand there, you've got to kind of go in knowing, I'm really interested in the direct to consumer retail sale type model, and you may or may not, sell some kegs wholesale to some local restaurants or breweries, which is, it's great advertising for, to get people to, be able to try your beer where they may not have come into your place, made a special trip there. So it's great advertising. And then the other thing is to have a bigger production brewery with like a tasting room kind of model. And that's obviously pretty common. But a lot of that has to do with...
But a production brewery, you're also selling through wholesale, through restaurants, through other sources, right?
Right. Your predominant cash flow is coming from wholesale accounts.
Right. And the margins on those are probably less than half, right?
Oh, yeah. Less than half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to go back, I did the numbers here real quick. Half barrel is 15.5 gallons. We're talking about half barrel kegs are typically what's sold in the U.S., which is 58.6 liters. So for those of you overseas, we're talking about 58 liters roughly. And a barrel, U.S. barrel, is roughly a little over 100 liters, right? So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are the kinds of numbers we're talking about here. Well, a lot of breweries start out small, selling right out of the tap room, but then they eventually go through an expansion and move into commercial sales where the profit margin drops substantially. So growth's a problem in the industry as well, because it's hard to grow into smaller and smaller margins, right?
It can be, yes. And, you know, a lot of that is you've got to understand the market that you're in. If you're in a smaller community there's another bigger production brewery, for example, it's going to be harder for you to sell the beer to all those different accounts as well. And just trying to, you know, just in today's market, it's really important to know what your individual niche is.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before the show, but the craft market's getting more and more crowded now. It is harder and harder to get into, you know, grocery stores, tap, restaurants, and so on, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, and that's the one benefit of having your own tap room is you get to choose what's on there. You don't have to battle with somebody else. And a lot of that battle happens not only with, oh, you'll just sell more of my beer because it's so awesome, but hey, I'll cut you a great deal on it that the other guy won't cut you. And it's great beer. So, and that's just, that's how competition and capitalism works.
Yeah. So I think most people, because of the size and the money and the marketing and everything required to go into a production brewery model, most breweries start out more with a tap room model. Would that be accurate, I think?
You know, that's what we're really seeing is a lot of them starting more of them starting smaller and growing than what we were seeing 5 years ago, you know, even 2 years ago, where it's, hell, this is my first brewery and I'm going to start with a 30 barrel brew house. That was pretty common.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, another fundamental decision you have to pick is obviously a location. How important is a location and how do you go about picking one?
Well, that is a great question. And, you know, there's so many of these topics that we're going to talk about today that have nothing to do with making, you know, brewing beer and recipes and all that. But it's a massive part of the business and really determines whether it's going to be successful or not. So as far as location, if you're just a production brewery and you're going to have a little tap room just, you know, to get some local interest, it's probably a lot more economic to move out into an industrial area where properties are less expensive, you know, so you can spend less per month on the rent. And then people will make that destination trip, you know, to come out and visit the tap room. But recognize the predominant amount of your revenues and profits coming from the production brew house. So, you know, you're not going to be maximizing your taproom sales if you're out in one of those areas, most likely. So then on the other end of the extreme is if you're going to be a taproom, you really need to go where the customers are and where the customers want to go. Very, you know, I encourage people to think not as a brewery or where can I get a better deal, but where do I need to go where my customers want to go? Sometimes they like to go out into, you know, a country setting and get away. If that's where, you know, you see your niche, a lot of times it's, hey, I want to go down to the cool downtown strip where, you know, lots going on and just bounce around between, you know, a couple bars and a tap room or two and that. So it's really doing that research and determining what you want your niche to be, but really figuring out where's your customer going to want to go.
Yeah. I always think real estate, the three rules of real estate are location, location, location. So, it does make a huge difference if you're in the right location, you're running a retail business really.
Right. You know, and that's not that you don't want to be mindful of costs, but you know, you've got to look at it not as, oh, that property is three times as expensive as the one down on the county road. You got to look at it as I'll probably sell five times as much beer at this property than I will at the other one. So in my business plan and business model, it makes sense.
And of course, next, let's talk about the realities of running a tap room, which means you have to have employees, you've got to have potentially a manager, you've got to have, you know, facility set up that look, you know, that's attractive and bring draws people in, has atmosphere and all that. What are some of the considerations that come into play there?
Well, one of the big considerations in what I like to suggest to people when you're going to, you know, thinking in that planning stage of brewing is what are all the weekly tasks that need to be done? There's obviously brewing beer, but there's also doing all the cellaring tasks, kegging, all the fermentation measurements that you need to do, yeast management, all those kind of things. So that, you know, as homebrewers, we pretty much know we've got to do those things and roughly how long that's going to take. But the other thing is now you've got to do bookkeeping, and are you going to do that yourself? And, or are you going to hire somebody to do that? Ordering your supplies and, advertising. You know, how am I going to advertise? Who's going to do the advertising on Facebook? Am I going to do that, or am I going to have somebody do that? Am I going to be open 7 days a week? Am I going to be open Thursday through Sunday? Am I going to be open Saturday during the day, Sunday during, you know, things like that you have to be thinking about. How am I going to cover all that? And, so you have to start thinking about, okay, well, maybe starting out, I'll do all the brewing and cellar work, but I'm going to have somebody help with the tap room. So I'm going to hire somebody to work in the tap room during the week, and maybe I'll pitch out in there on the weekend. So that's when you have to start thinking about, how am I going to get all this stuff done? And I also encourage you to have a plan. If you do end up with explosive growth, which that's kind of the plan, that you know what you're going to do. So, to respond to that, because the worst thing to happen is to always be out of beer. And a little side note there, no shame in guest taps. That's an easy way to always have something to sell. So just bear that in mind, too.
And of course, a lot of people also aren't used to all the things that come with the accounting, the doing payroll, all those other things that come into play, right? Just managing people. You got to find people, you got to hire them, you got to, in some cases, fire them, right?
Absolutely. It's something that, as a business owner myself and Brad as well, you learn, and particularly in today's environment, it's extremely difficult to find people that, are going to be reliable, honest, all that. With the unemployment rate so low, it can be difficult. Fortunately, in the homebrewing because of the homebrewing market and the whole hobby, you can get a lot of those people that are just going to be great, honest people that would love to have part-time jobs doing work in your breweries. That's a great resource that we have in this industry that a lot of other industries don't enjoy. But, the management of people, don't underestimate how much effort and time that can consume, both training. Encouraging them to continue growing and, working at your own culture in your company. That's something that we hold very dear and it's our primary thing we use to hire people, is making sure they fit in our culture. And, so that you just have a great, successful, harmonious office environment. So those are just some of the things. You've got payroll taxes, different reports you'll have to file for running retail. You're going to have, usually they'll start you off on monthly where you have to file taxes. And then, and of course, you've got the extra set of taxes. That would be sales tax. Alcohol production, you're going to have the taxes associated with beer production. So that's going to be a lot of record keeping and and documents you have to file and payments you have to make.
Just for reference, I run a one person business and I pay 12 different kinds of taxes, and most of them are monthly. So it gives you some idea of how much fun it is to run a business.
It is quite impressive.
We haven't talked about it, but it gets even worse if you want to actually add food. Right now, you're running a restaurant, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of that's a really mixed bag. So if you're going to serve food, you're going to have the health department that's going to come and peek around your place unannounced and things like that. But I still think being home brewers, we're just so used to sanitation and keeping things not gross. So I think that is something that comes a little bit more natural to home brewers that are going to go pro. But you still have to, follow all the rules and regulations. And I think most communities are pretty darn helpful in trying to help you understand. What they don't like is when you say, "That's dumb, I'm not doing it." They don't have much of a sense of humor for that.
But
nor does the TTB.
But I mean, restaurants are a challenge in themselves. Very low margins typically on food. And you got to put together menus, you got to keep supplies, you got to throw out a lot of food. Real challenge, right?
It very well can be. And I think, having in your niche and trying to figure out what, who you are as a business and what you're going to do differently in is, you can do everything from the big benefit about having food is you don't have people coming in for a pint, maybe, and then just, hey, let's go over to, so-and-so and get a pizza or go out for dinner and then they're leaving. You'll have them spend an evening there where they may, have two or maybe three pints of beer and that brings that revenue up. So the trick is, how do you get that food? And I've seen things from people making arrangements with nearby restaurants and having menus on the table, and they can just call there and the restaurants will deliver it right to the bar. Now, as a bar owner, you generally don't make much of anything on that, but you do keep them at your establishment longer. Then there's the food truck route, which, again, you're not necessarily going to be making profit on it other than having them stay longer at your place. Then I've also seen places that will do some special menu items. Like it might be they may do pizzas. There's a place in a small community near where I grew up, and they do, some kind of gourmet pretzels that they make. And that's extremely low cost and quite high margin. I think they said they sold, they either sold like $10,000 or $30,000 worth of pretzels in their opening month, some insane amount. So, some of that is just kind of, do you necessarily need a, are you going to be a brew pub grill or type of thing? Or are you just going to have some things to keep people there for longer periods? So, but either way, anytime you're going to serve food, you're going to have to pay attention to, the health requirements and different things like that. But don't let that intimidate you. It's just, it's a lot of these rules and specifications and all that stuff. And, it's just, somebody can sit down with you and help you with that. I found most inspectors with anything, if you're just not, if you have the attitude, I want to play by the rules, I just need to know the rules, they're more than happy to help. I've experienced that with electrical inspectors to, we had the state IRS come in and, just for an audit, normal crap and just kind to them, they go about their business and everything's good. So,
Related to that, startup in particular, when you set up your location or whatever, now you've got a variety of renovations and building to do. And from what I've heard, most of the people I've talked to that are going pro say, they that's where they overrun usually, not on equipment, but just the renovations that need to be done, a lot of times to comply with local code. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're 100% right. It's, the equipment costs are pretty, pretty basic things to forecast and figure out this is what it's going to cost. And, with the installation, you can generally get you know, contractors of, you know, just to move stuff, you know, those costs are pretty, you know, you're not going to get many overruns on that. I think where a lot of people run into overruns is they didn't know what they needed before they even started looking for properties. For example, floor loading, where people might get into a building, yeah, this would be great, and then realize they can't put the equipment on that floor because it's not capable of bearing that much weight. Then you've got to put infrastructure underneath, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, knowing where you're going to put your equipment and can, you know, so, you know, you can, when you're talking to your, you know, commercial broker, for example, you say, I've got to have this and I've got to have this and I've got to have that. Another one is electrical power. A lot of these breweries run on, brew houses run on electric power, and that's a great way to go. That's the predominant type systems that we sell. But you've got to be in a building that has that kind of power that you need. And most of the equipment manufacturers can tell you, okay, you want a 5-barrel brew house, it's going to be about this much power. And some of the other things is, okay, well, is, you know, just kind of knowing, do I have 3-phase power available, or is it single phase? And you know, how much do I have available in that building? Will they need to run it over? You know, again, your broker, you know, the real estate broker ought to be able to help with that. You know, and then there's things that aren't even related to brewing. It's, is it zoned for what it is that I want it to do? Or am I going to have to get it rezoned? And that means going to the, you know, the county or the city zoning boards and petitioning for that. So make sure you know how it's zoned for use.
Things like bathrooms, I know, and all this other stuff, right, starts to come up, right?
Right. So, you know, and knowing, okay, what do I need for, that's a great one. How many bathrooms do I need? How many parking spots do I need is another one. We had to, on our building, we had to have, just because of the square footage, we had to have about twice as many parking spots as what we needed. But we kind of knew that going in, and, you know, had some, you know, a place that we just used for storing material. It happens to have parking lot lines on it.
A friend of mine ran into energy thing. He had to have like a double door into the place, and he had to go install a second vestibule, I guess, for energy efficiency, I guess. All these local code things kind of kick in.
Yeah, you know, and handicap access. That was another thing. We had a door, for example. I mean, some of this, you know, that it can kind of spring on you, is we had a door that was at ground level with parking right next to it. You had to go through the warehouse to get to the office, and they deemed that as unacceptable. So we had to build a handicap ramp on the front of our building at the cost of a lot to meet ADA compliance for that. You know, so there's some of those things, you know, don't assume. And, you know, before you start with a lease on that, it would behoove you to talk with a contractor that is familiar with all this stuff. Because you're talking, you know, different things, you know, even simple things like, will the building owner allow you to do roof penetrations if you want to have a vent stack in, or you want to put, you know, a kitchen with a hood in, and, you know, what you're going to need for grease trap things, and, you know, just, you know, a number of different things.
Another big one is soundproofing, actually, right? A lot of these places can be quite loud, and the louder it is, the worse your beer tastes, actually.
Yeah. and the shorter people stay. That's the important thing. I actually did a lot of sound attenuation work when I was an engineer at Caterpillar, but that was like massive diesel engines, and was more just to get them close to residential area for backup power. But what I've noticed, you know, the architectural trends are hard surfaces, you know, concrete patterned floors or tile floors, hard walls, you know, industrial look on the ceiling and that kind of stuff, which really looks awesome, but it turns it into just an echo chamber. And, you know, speech intelligibility goes to crap, where, you know, and it just, you know, the overall sound level raises, people can't hear each other talking. And so they have to talk louder and it gets louder and louder. And there's just a lot of people that won't even, they just won't go back.
We had Randy Mosher on. It's interesting. The taste actually, your sense of taste actually changes when you're in a very loud space and you can't taste subtleties, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, bottom line is you do need build a lot of margin into your plan for a lot of these unexpected things, because these are the things that kind of get you when you actually go to open a place, and also the ones that take all the time.
Yeah. Right? You know, and some of them are expensive if you didn't plan ahead. Like with sound attenuation, a lot of that stuff can be very inexpensive. You know, just, you know, like ceiling mounted sound suppression panels that just stop that echoing, you know, or, you know, even, you know, fabric on walls and different things like that. It doesn't have to be super expensive. But if you build the building or, you know, remodel the building and then try to put it in, it can start getting expensive. But, you know, so, you know, just things like power access. You know, just knowing going in, hey, I need to get a quote for, you know, from the power company to increase the service to the building. And a lot of times, even I found, even for our building, we needed more power. They're happy to sell you more power. So they installed transformers and ran power to the building at no cost, because, you know, we were going to just buy more power. So they were able to amortize that and go, yep, we'll put it in. So don't be afraid to ask that too. But, you know, just things like, okay, I want to go into a building that's got a concrete floor with no basement. Then I don't have to worry about floor loading. And, you know, and just general concrete thick, like 4 inches or whatever they typically will pour in a commercial building is going to be fine for the most part for a nano brewery, because they're just, you know, not that heavy. It's not like you're putting a 60 barrel brewery, fermenter up.
Well, how do people, how much time does it take to get started? What's a typical startup time from, you know, I want to lease a building to, or even just, I would start planning a brewery to actually getting it open.
You know, I would say ballpark, if people are pushing hard and really staying on it and have a good solid plan, my experience, it's about a year if you're pushing hard to really get it done, because you've got equipment to get, you've got, you know, to, you know, and that depends. It could be shorter if you know what you've found your building and you've got everything all lined up and you've got contractors available. But that's the thing, you know, you've got to have,
You're lucky and you pick up an existing space, huh?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That, you know, so it's going to vary, of course, but you've got permitting to file and get that going. And sometimes the places they, you know, you're not going to get your actual permits until you provide all the quotes for, you know, all the equipment you're going to put in. And then they'll give you the final permit once you have the equipment in place. And, you know, there's, you know, if you have to do variances or, you know, approvals from, you know, the state or the city or the county for, you know, for approval of your plan, sometimes that can take some time, you know, particularly when, you know, the economy is as strong as it is, you know, there's some backlogs.
Hard to get in front of the county board, right?
Right. Yeah. And you don't want to start without them, because, again, they don't have much of a sense of humor.
Yeah. Well, let's finally get around to talking about brewing equipment. How do you actually go about sizing the brewery? How do you decide what a reasonable size is and, you know, the trade-off between brewing all the time and, you know, brewing once a week or something like that?
I'm going to give a quick answer to that, and then I'm going to go into the longer story, but doing all the things that we just talked about, it's like setting up, this would be a good analogy for any engineers out there. It's like setting up the integral. That's the work, is trying to figure out how you're going to put your integral together for your math model. After that, it's just algebra.
Some of the audience may not relate to that, but okay.
I know. I just threw that out there just to add a little geekery. But really, the point I'm getting to is all that stuff that we just talked about, that's going to really lead you into what size system you need. You know, that's like, okay, after that, the math is simple to just figure that out. So, you know, to kind of recap, do that market study, and your business plan and figure out how much beer can I sell? How much beer can I sell in my community? And, you know, a lot of times if you have similar breweries, most are pretty cooperative in talking about how much they brew and how many times a week they brew and how much they sell and things like that. But other communities, you just may not have a brewery, so you may not have that local input. So find a community that's like yours, that's near, either nearby or, you know, in a similar, you know, community. It might be like, for example, you know, your community in Indiana doesn't have one, but I know that there's one over in Illinois that's next door that has got something similar. Let me see how they do. You know, it might be a little rural community, or it might be a, you know, 200,000 population city. So some of that is just figuring out how much can I sell?
Yep.
Because that's going to determine it. The other thing that we talked about earlier on, figuring out all the different stuff that you're going to be having to do every day that is not necessarily making wort or fermenting wort. How many days does that leave me to brew? So that can limit it too. If you can only brew 2 days a week or 3 days a week, or you may have a job and you may be, you know, that, you know, while you're getting this going and you're only going to be able to brew in the evening or on weekends, you know, factor those things in. Then we talked about employment. Are you going to have somebody help you with the brewing process? We're going to train somebody to come in and brew so that you can be doing other things while they're brewing. There's a book I read that I can't remember off the top of my head, but one of the things that I took away from it was there's a big difference between working in the business and working on the business. So working in the business is being your own employee and, you know, baking the bread and, you know, mopping the floors.
And in some cases, it's not necessarily a whole lot of fun to, you know, to haul around these 50-pound grain bags, right?
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as making a 5-gallon batch, right?
Right. And then the other thing is working on the business, and that's where you're out doing the marketing work, doing the business work, really studying, you know, learning about the finances and how money moves in the business and, you know, making sure that, you know, you've got, you know, enough cash to keep going. That's the number one thing that tanks companies is not having enough sales, but it's having so many sales that you can't keep up and you outrun your cash headlights. But anyway, that's what I call working on the business. And that was a big takeaway I had, you know, from that, that book. And those are the kind of things that really help you decide how big of a brew house to put in. Some other things to factor in that we haven't talked in yet about yet is, you know, I talked briefly about your niche, and your niche might be, you know, hey, I'm going to have three of our own beers on tap that are going to kind of be our flagship beers. And then I'm going to have beers from other, you know, beers from your state that, you know, that are more like from smaller breweries around. I'm going to have that could be your niche. Or, I'm just going to have, you know, three flagships and four rotating, beers. And I'm really going to focus on German lagers, which moving forward there a little bit, lagers are going to take a little bit longer to make. So, you may need more cellaring equipment.
We haven't talked about it yet, but I mean, how do you go about picking out the beer lineup and how do you, you know, decide exactly what you want to brew?
You know, some of that is, you know, you've learned as a home brewer, what the potential market, like meaning friends and things, what they like. And remember, it's not what that mental transition to a business is. It's not selling the beer you like to brew because you like it and, you know, a lot of your buddies like it. It's selling beer that your customers want to buy. You know, if you just don't like, you know, peanut butter porter, I'm just making some weird thing out there, but everybody, you know, because you just like, you know, I just don't like it. But everybody in the customers come in asking for peanut butter porter. Well, you better brew peanut butter porter.
I'm thinking IPAs here is the perfect example, but
Yeah. Like, you know, some people don't want to brew New England IPAs because it's a fad, or because they just, you know, don't like them, or who knows what. But if your customers are coming in and that's what they want to drink.
I mean, if I walk into the average tap room, and at least in my area, over half the beers are IPAs now. Probably three quarters, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there will say you've got to have your East Coast, you got to have your West Coast, you got to have your Midwestern, you got to have a double, and you know, you've got to have, and you've got to have a session, you know.
And they're all IPAs.
Right. So, you know, that's that know your market. And every place is going to be different. Breweries on the West Coast, you know, customers on the West Coast are going to want different kind of beers than, you know, somebody in Idaho, or somebody in Arkansas, or somebody in Iowa, or, you know, somebody in Ohio or Florida. You know, they're all going to have slightly different tastes, whether it be climate, whether it be, you know, beers that just, you know, kind of seem popular there. But you can also adapt and flex. You know, there's a lot of tap rooms I've seen that they want 12 taps, and they will have something. You will never have the same beer twice. You know, you come in the next time, that one's gone, we've got some other ones on. So that's going to lead you to brew smaller batches more often. But you're turning different things over. And if that's your niche, it's like, you know, hey, I want to go to that place. It's always got something new and unusual, you know. And the nice thing there is you can kind of test market what, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and make different varieties of that. You know, I've seen places that will even do like a, you know, they'll do a kettle sour base, and in the fermenter, they'll flavor it all sorts of different fruits. I've seen things from, what was it, Pop-Tarts to, you know, all the different berries and all sorts of unusual things. But you can do it with the same base beer and turn that into multiple different beers.
But so going back to the equipment, I mean, that the selections you make with beer really drive the equipment as well, right?
It absolutely does. So once you figured out how many times a week you can brew and how many styles you want to have on tap at one time, and how quickly you estimate that you're going to consume those, turn those over, you know, then it becomes, oh, okay, well, I need this size brew house because I'm going to brew this many times a week. And I need, and those beers are going to stay in the fermenter for, you know, 10 days. And they're going to, you know, and they're going to stay in the bright tank for 2 or 3 days to clarify and carbonate. And then the other thing too to factor in is, are you going to serve out of bright tanks, or are you going to just have a, you know, one or two bright tanks that you're clarifying and carbonating in and then running into kegs? So the bigger your brew house gets, the more you're going to lean towards serving at least your flagship beers out of bright tanks, and less out of kegs. If you're that model where I'm going to have 12 different beers on tap, and you know, I'm just going to brew one or two barrels at a time, and you know, we're just going to keep blowing through them, and I'm going to brew you know, every day, then you know, it would be easier to just run those into kegs. And a lot of people just forego the bright tank and just run them right into kegs and clarify and fine in the keg because they're not moving their kegs around.
Interesting. So, I mean, and then obviously you're going to do, you know, more exotic stuff, barrel aged and stuff, sours. They take a tremendous amount of time. Lagers take a lot of time, for example, right?
Right. So
I mean, what's a typical setup? You got obviously a brewing setup, and then how many fermenters roughly would you look at selling for a typical setup?
Like a typical 3.5 barrel brewery would be, you know, 4 to 6 fermenters and 1 or 2 bright tanks would be a typical one. You know, and that's also in general, adding fermentation vessels is the way to expand your capacity. So you would generally just, you know, brew more often, or, you know, I mean, it'd be great to be able to brew multiple shifts.
Yeah, I know there's some places that brew twice a day, even some that brew around the clock. Yeah.
Right. And double batching, versus brewing, double batch of the same thing.
Two batches going into one fermenter, right?
Right. It kind of depends, what your plan is to how many of those you're going to have, and are you going to run them off into kegs and that kind of thing.
And of course, somebody has to pay for all this. And, a basic startup would probably easily run into the many tens of thousands of dollars and more likely into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. How do you go about funding that?
There's a number of different ways to do that. Get to know your banker well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where you start. And that's where your business plan is going to be pretty much required, unless you're going to fund this yourself. And, the nice thing about the nano breweries is it's a lot more economical to get into that versus a big production brewery where you're talking, literally millions. To do those. And the other nice thing is, it lowers your risk a bit. And, if your plan is to get into a 20 barrel brew house, and you start with a smaller one, you can really test market to make sure, the demand really is there. And then you've got, your startup system can become your pilot system, which is kind of nice. But get to know your banker. They will help you with developing a business plan. I think the Brewers Association just announced a pre-order for a new book that, I swear you turn 55 and you start losing your mind.
Going Pro Brook, I assume?
It's a book on, brewery finance. In fact, that might be the name of it. But anyway, check out the Brewers Association. But that book's going to talk about that kind of stuff. So educate yourself on those things. Talk to a banker. What do I need? There's a lot of communities that will have and entrepreneurial programs where you can talk to business people, local business people. It might be Lazy Boy Recliner, business owner. Putting a business plan together is, very similar. So, those folks can point you in the right path and be good mentors. Even talking to another local brewer is helpful. So that's really with the financing, get to know the bankers. Sometimes the banks they don't know much about brewing, so they may be a little goosey. There's a number of banks, national banks that focus on breweries. Brewery finance is one of them that you'll see at Craft Brewers Conference in different places. Then, of course, there's the traditional, going out doing some funding, fundraising, getting partners to come in, bring on partners. The thing there to be very cautious about is, when you have when you bring on a partner, it's no longer just you making the decisions on this, because they're expecting a return on their investment as well. So, that's something to consider.
And it can be very difficult to extricate yourself from a partnership, right?
Yes, it can. Yes, it can. Particularly,
if the partners start to disagree.
Yeah, or if they're friends or family, that can be a problem. So, if you can be the sole guy that's or gal, that's definitely makes that a lot easier on that end. If you can reach out to one of these, entrepreneur workshop type places, they can help you with that as well. But be very careful when you bring on partners or when you're taking, money from others, because that really is a commitment and a promise to give them a return. And, it's important to do the right thing there, but it's also can be risky on your end as well.
Yeah, I know, even with, have like angel funding where, people come in and fund your business. They're usually looking to get that money out in a fairly short amount of time, usually within a few years. So, it becomes very difficult in some cases to hang on.
Yeah. And I say, if the bank isn't willing to lend you money, you really need to look at your business plan and be honest with yourself as to why aren't they willing to lend me money? Mm-hmm. you know, is it because your costs are too high? Is it because your sales projections just don't seem realistic? You know, is it, you know, some of it, you know, can be as simple as, you know, you're not going to be able to lease a building for that kind of cost, or you haven't included renovation costs, or you haven't, you know, included, you know, all the different taxes. So we talk about
having a big margin too.
Right,
very important.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, or cash flows, you know, yeah, it shows you're making a profit, but guess what? You're spending more than you're making. That's kind of one of the other real things to look at, you know, just one of the big things is be honest with yourself and, you know, listen to the bank. If the bank won't lend you money, there's a reason, you know, cause they make money by lending money. They don't make money by lending money to somebody they don't think is going to pay them back. So just take that to heart. Don't take it personally and just find out, you know, why that is and fix it. And one of the other things, even with, your beer, and I'm sure most people have heard this already. You know, when you're doing your test batches, don't ask your buddies what they think of it. They're going to tell you what you want to hear. You need to ask complete strangers. You need to ask people that aren't beer, you know, connoisseurs, what they think of it, because a large portion of your customer base is going to be people who
casual drinkers, right?
Yeah, casual drinkers, and they've got to like what you're making. And again, if it's a triple IPA that's, you know, quadruple hopped, you know, and that's just, you know, you just think it's amazing, and you know, the beer judges are like, "Dang, this is just great," you know. But you know, a guy and his wife come in and you know and take one sip and go, "Oh my gosh, I can't drink that." Yeah. That's not going to make you money. So you know, I say when you're doing this test marketing and you've got some of your beers to sample, get people you don't know.
Send them right to John, right?
Yeah.
He'll sample them for you.
You know, or if they're judges, that will truly give you an honest, you know, assertion of what they think of your beers. And then don't take it personally and be honest, because they're really doing you a favor. If you go to market with a beer that isn't hitting the mark, you could lose all of what you've put into that business, and you don't want that to happen. So the people that are doing you the favors are the ones that are being honest with you. The ones that are telling you what you want to hear are the ones that could be an accomplice in you starting a business.
I'm thinking of, I think you were there for the story. I think it was a Sierra Nevada. They threw out like the guy threw out the first eight batches or something. Cause it wasn't up to a standard, I think. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And great personal expense, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, this was like a 5-barrel system or something, you know, which was huge back then, so he was, you know, he went from a home brewer to, you know, a commercial brewer. So it was, you know, like $1,000 a batch or something. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, that was a ton of cash.
We're talking about an example where this is one of the early startups, but they actually started the brewery, and the brewer/owner throughout, I think it was the first 7 or 8 batches, because they weren't up to his standards, and he wasn't going to serve them. So, I mean, that's a good example of you know, going that extra mile for the customer, I guess.
And they did halfway decent, it seems.
Yeah. This is, the last question I want to ask you is, how do you manage growth? So let's say you go through all this, you know, go through the gauntlet here, you get the brewery open, and you start selling beer, and it's selling like hotcakes. What do you do now? How do you step up to the next level?
Well, I'm going to give you a great piece of advice that I learned from my boss's boss's boss. I don't know how many bosses it was, who had his hands around my throat. And after saying, "God, why do all engineers think alike?" And I somehow managed to not say, because we're always right. But then he said, "The runway behind you doesn't do you any good." And that is something that totally stuck with me from this guy. He was actually a great boss. I just drove him crazy, I think. But what I mean there is, you've got a plan for growth, and you've also got a plan for not growth. So, you know, plan for what you think you need, you know, and also, you know, have a little bit of forethought, but don't, you know, if you think, yeah, I can start with a 3-barrel brew house, don't start with a 10, thinking eventually you'll grow in it, because you may never be able to fund all of that equipment to get you to that point. You know, so you know, some of that is really, what is my startup plan, and then what's my growth plan? Leave room in the building, because the fastest way to grow is to just add fermentation space and brew more often. You can brew 24/7. You know, you can hire people to do that. So the brew house is generally not going to be your limiter. It's going to be your cellar space. Of course, it gets to a point where, okay, can I justify having, you know, hiring, you know, three people to brew, you know, all day long, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, of course, there's a limit to that, but, you know, leave yourself space for growth. And the neat thing about adding cellaring equipment is I can get that in fairly short order and double the amount of beer I can brew. So, you know, that's really the thing, is plan. Do I have enough space? Do I have enough, you know, glycol chiller capacity? Can I add glycol chiller capacity? You know, what's my plan for hiring people?
We also talk about this other challenge with, let's say you're really successful in the tap room. Now you got this kind of ugly choice. You either got to grow into, you know, turn yourself into a production brewery, or you have to open another tap room somewhere, right?
Right, right.
So, I mean, there's just, you know,
yeah, and that's one of the other things too, is making sure that you've got a reasonable size building. You know, I won't say buy all you can afford. That's the voice of realtors. But I've never been disappointed with getting a little bit more than what I think I need. Yeah. And you know, so it's, you know, just having that space where you can grow. Try to, you know, some of that is, you know, particularly with your retail space, that's what the customers are going to be experiencing. And if you can, you know, make that a nice place with some possibility to grow, like you might move into a building that's got another unit next to it that you could expand into, you know, that'd be something that would be nice to be able to do. I know there's that brewery I was talking about earlier does the delivery of different restaurants around. They actually expanded into the unit next to them, and we're able to have, they're planning to do some more cooking and things. So I have a little, you know, a restaurant there. So so that's really that planning, is that putting that runway ahead of you. That is going to help. You don't need to use all the runway, but you know, and that runway is the planning, but you need to be ready for it.
Great. Well, John, unfortunately, we're coming out of running out of time here. I think we could talk for another hour easily about this, but
I think so.
Really appreciate you coming on the show, John. Thank you.
Well, it's always glad, and I thank you for the opportunity, Brad, to just be able to give back to an industry and folks that have helped me out so much. So it's just an honor to give back to everybody, and I really appreciate it. So.
And my guest today was Mr. John Blickman, president of Blickman Engineering, producers of both home brewing and large commercial brewing equipment now.
That's so. Right. Oh, and for people that really want to learn a lot more about this, there is NanoCon in, happened in the, I think it's the 31st through the 4th, I believe, of October.
This is sponsored by Brew Your Own Magazine, I believe, so right. You can probably pull that NanoCon up.
Yeah, and it's going to be in Vancouver, Washington, beautiful area. And you'll be able to rub elbows with some great experts in that industry. I'll be there giving a presentation on sizing your brewery. And there's just so many more people that are there to help. You can talk to just the other attendees. Just a great way to learn about this as you're starting to think about going pro. So have a look for your own NanoCon.
Well, thank you again, John. Appreciate you being on the show.
Absolutely.
A big thank you to John Blickman for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're currently offering 20% off their all-access subscription pass with access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com/beersmith and get your all-access pass today. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com/beersmith. And also Blickman Engineering with the new Brew Commander. The Brew Commander is a new brew house controller available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is an innovative, high-quality brew house controller with ultra-high precision and the ultimate in flexibility. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. Order yours today. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com for more information. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And Beersmith 3 is available now for download on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, new Whirlpool hop options, support for high-altitude brewing, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.